This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on the following show are solely those of the host, guest, and its callers. It's time for The Growth Strategist. Here's your host, Aldana Ambler.
Welcome to the show. This is The Growth Strategist, and I'm Aldana Ambler. And each week on our program, you know, we focus on the mid-sized companies, the ones that are between, say, 20 and 200 million that have $1 billion in your eyes. We focus on the growth strategies that are going to take you there. And so one week it's on strategic alliances. The next week it might be, you know, growing your business through an IPO. And the next week it might be geographic expansion. And then, you know, what I do periodically is I'll have themes for a few shows in a row. And that's what I've been doing for the last few weeks. I've picked some people that seem to me to have that balance of how do they make the decisions quick enough that they're not blindsided by the competition. They can go for the next wave of growth. They're not lost in analysis paralysis. And I've been listening for that CEO talent. And so we've had three shows in pretty close succession here. I'm going to make sure that I say the names right. I thought Stan Fridstein's show was particularly good in showing you how to, you know, really get up to speed on what's going on in the marketplace and analyze, you know, what are the changes. Make sure that you're making a move. And in his case, you know, they went for an IPO and they even sold at a key time when the market was making a dramatic change. So that was the first one. And then we've had one this week and then we're having one again today. So for the opening segment here, I want to talk about what does it take to not get lost in analysis paralysis? What does it take to ride the waves? That's our theme today. How do you recognize the wave that's happening in the marketplace? And if your company is ready to ride a bigger wave than the next time, how do you gear up and decide, okay, here's the next wave we're riding, and then let it go. You know, actually build the capabilities as you can, and then enjoy the ride. And this is an important concept because as fast as the marketplace is moving, as fast as the companies change, as fast as capabilities have to be developed, as fast as technologies are coming online, if you're so lost in waiting for perfect, if you're waiting for your processes to be completely ready for you to be a $50 million company or a $100 million company, you don't ride the waves in the meantime to take you there. If you wait for perfect, it isn't going to happen. And if you're analyzing it all the time and nervous, you slow yourselves down. So it really isn't a fine-tuned balance between working on improvement versus being so preoccupied with the internal that you don't focus on the external. So one of the things I've recommended to people over the last several shows, I've recommended that you read Vern Harnish's book on Mastering the Rockefeller Habits. I think it's excellent. And I've affiliated a little bit with the Gazelles organization, in part because that methodology really works for rapidly growing companies. And one of the pieces of that methodology that I like the best is the meeting rhythms that are recommended there. And the idea is that you're not looking at strategy every minute. You're just not. You know, if you can have your quarterly sessions as an executive group and seriously, you know, stop the day-to-day analysis, stop the looking at, you know, what are some minutiae, and actually ask yourself, revisit the major strategic questions. You know, pick a day that your team is going to be looking at them again. You're not going to contemplate your navel. You're going to ask the big questions. In this day and age, waiting a whole year isn't often enough. But once a quarter, if your team is asking strategic questions, okay, now what does that mean? It means things like, okay, how should we be funded? Is it time for us to move off of the organic style and actually bring in some outside financing? Truly ask it, not just gloss over it. Okay, ask yourself the question about, do we have the right executive team? You're not going to ask that every day, but once a quarter, kind of revisit it. All right, maybe you're ready for the real CFO. Maybe your company has been with a controller, and that's fine, and they'd be great at what they're doing, but are you really at the point where you better bring in, ratchet up that position, and bring somebody in that knows scenario analysis, knows how to, you know, work with investment bankers, knows how to do, you know, the scenarios and the pros and cons of a next acquisition? Should you be looking at an acquisition versus trying to just grow organically? Should you be, get it, those level of questions, can't wait for a year. A lot of the companies that are, you know, tiny, the ones that never really wanted to grow, or the big behemoths might be able to last a whole year without looking at it. But in the middle, you're not looking at it once a quarter and saying, okay, yes, no, go. And really know that you've got answers to those strategic questions on a quarterly basis. You're probably missing a lot. Now, what happens is when people confer, you know, when they actually get together on that quarterly basis, ask those tough questions, a few of them are going to be clear. No problem. You know exactly what it is. Yeah, we're staying the course on this product. This is our target market. Here's our pricing strategy. You can answer them. And then there's a few where you don't know what you're doing. And so maybe the conclusion, the biggest conclusion you can have from those quarterly sessions is our priority for this quarter is to get a good answer to those tough questions we don't know. Instead of punting, instead of acting like you do know it, instead of avoiding it, you intentionally say, we're going to get an answer to that. So, and if there's a pattern to which of those questions you don't know the answer to, you got to address what kind of outside help you need. So let's say you run through the six or seven major financial questions. What should our debt to equity ratio be at this point? I don't know. Should we be leading with cash management or debt? I don't know. Should we be going with outside financing or doing it internally? God, I don't know. Well, if you keep getting I don't know, there's a hint that you might need outside advice related to your financial situation. Or you hit the, if you look at the marketing kinds of things and you really don't know anymore whether or not you should be premium price or you should be leading as a niche or a challenger, and you've got some basic questions there. Get the advice this quarter so that when you run through your quarterly session, you at least have answers that make sense. And what you're looking for is alignment. This is what we're all trying to get, and alignment changes from quarter to quarter to quarter. If it's an evolving business, a dynamic situation, you're growing, you've got a different group of people, you've got different customers, you've got different questions. Your alignment's not going to stay the same. Now, remember what alignment's about. If you've listened to several of these shows, you know that it's a combination of what's your strategy, what's going on in the execution of your business, how do you deliver what you said you were going to do, the people that you have on board, the primary people, the key people, the A players, and your cash, how you manage money. Are your key decisions in those four areas aligned? If they're always staying the same, if you notice that your answers in any one of those four areas stays static, and you have the same key people and you never revisit it, and you're not looking at the organizational structure, you're never saying, you know, I bet we're due for a change there, you might have some blind spots related to that category of alignment. And I've seen some clients where that's the case, where you know, they've gotten so attached to the founders that they brought into the business, or they don't want to ask a tough question about, is it time for us to get a COO because it sounds expensive? And there's resistance to looking at the people question. Each of us has our own, you know, way, area of these four things where we excel. Everybody's got one that they, you know, that's what put them into business. Maybe you were marvelous at marketing and sales. You really know how the market, you know, moves. You're able to pick up on opportunities. You're not afraid of selling. You're going after the big accounts. You embrace the sales side. Well, maybe there's another piece of the business that you tolerate. Maybe you're okay at the financial side of it. And you deal with it and you ask the questions, but it's not something that you embrace, you really love. And then there's a third area or a fourth area that you basically avoid. And you have to force yourself to face it or you're not going to have questions asked. And it could be that you're not dealing with the operations, you know, that the day-to-day implementation, the process, the follow-through, that stuff isn't what you love. Each one of us has a pattern. So watch the pattern of when you get together every quarter, which questions do you gloss over because you think it's obvious? Which ones do you tinker with and you have to have somebody tell you? And which ones are you avoiding? And you always act like it's the same answer from now until eternity. All right, if you've got that particular rhythm, and that's only one part of the rhythm, by the way. If, you know, when you read the Mastering the Rockefeller Habits or go to one of the seminars that Gazelles International provides, then you'll see things like daily huddles for the people who are, you know, really implementing within individual departments. And you'll see the idea of, you know, weekly interactions cross-functional. I mean, it's a good model. And it's not, you know, rocket science. The idea of it is that it's an easy read for people to actually implement. But when you got that rhythm, then what are you looking for? And I'd like to suggest that the people who really understand how to ride waves are particularly good at bringing in the external information. They're the ones, like, that's why I thought Stan was such a good person for this phase of our, you know, this three-show series that we're doing. He has an internalized sense of, you know, what kind of market research he had to look for, what kind of demographics, what kind of statistics did they have to track to see, to sense changes. Okay, if, you know, when you sat down and you reviewed your major questions once a quarter And there's new information about your customers. There's new information about what the market is saying, new information about what the articles and the e-zines and the TV and the internet is saying about your marketplace. You didn't blow it off and act like, well, I know what I'm doing. We're so close to our customers. Of course we know. Well, no. What patterns, what trends are you seeing? And intentionally bring it in. And I find the people who are particularly good at what I call surfing, you know, watching for a new opportunity, sometimes it's a subtle pattern that they can evolve their business. So somebody who's in like the IT arena, what would be a subtle shift in what they might do? Okay, if they're looking at their customer base and they're listening to the news, it could be the nature of government contracts changing, something that Congress was doing that, you know, tightened or loosened up a budget. Something in the residential construction market that could have changed the receptivity to people to have change in their organization. It could be the unemployment rate that would set, or the, you know, that would set how fast companies will or won't grow. So how much receptivity to an IT change would a company have? Those big things, you know, often aren't even brought in to the executive room about what's going on around you to say, is there something that would affect receptivity to IT changes, receptivity to a staffing company? Is there something out there that's affecting you? Now, I'm going to give you an example from us that people listen to me and when I say this and they go, are you kidding that that would affect you? I can hear changes in how people talk on the radio as guests. And one of the things I've noticed in the last 6 months, a lot of the guys and gals who are running businesses that are about 10 million, and we often focus on people from 20 and up, but if the screening isn't good enough or whatever, and we end up with somebody at about 10, what I'm noticing is that they are talking about the past. They are talking about, you know, all the nifty things that their company's done with great pride and acting as though they didn't have a problem. And when somebody does that, when a series of people start to do that, my little antennas go up, because what are they not looking at? Are they starting to coast? Are they starting to get complacent? Are they arrogant? Are they resisting growing? Because if you focus too much on the past and how wonderful you were and act like you've never had a problem, you're blindsided by the future because you're not even focused on it. And I noticed that the guys in the $20 million companies have more humility. Something happens between 10 and 20. And they're saying things like, okay, here's what we're considering doing. Here's what we're looking at. Here's what we're trying. Here's what we're struggling with. Here's where we think we're going in the next year. That is a much more healthy attitude for a CEO to have. Here's what we want to do. Here's what we're trying. We're working really hard. We're excited about it. We're going to be negotiating this. I mean, a future focus. I get worried about the economy when people start sounding like those $10 million CEOs. And when the $20 million CEOs start sounding like the 10 and focus on the past and aren't having that humble, here's what we're trying to figure out, our economy is headed down. This is like one of those barometers. If you listen to people in the middle, the attitude of the CEOs is a mirror of where things are going. It's almost like a psychological barometer. Okay, ask yourself and listen to your executive team the next time you're in one of your quarterly sessions. Are the people on your team slipping into a focus on the past? And even if it's the past year, they're focusing on, here's what we got done. Here's what our clients liked. Here's what our recent accomplishments are. They could be needing a little more affirmation. That could be why they're doing it. But it is a regressive pattern. It is a I'm afraid of change pattern. It is not an embracing the future pattern. Listen for it, because it's one of the earlier bellwethers of slowed growth. Now, after the break, I'm going to introduce you to these guys that are so hot. They are co-CEOs of a rapidly growing company. Listen to how they talk. They don't have to change. I don't want to make them nervous. They just have to be themselves. They can't help it. And we'll see how somebody who's riding the waves and noticing them is doing it. This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. We'll be right back.
The bottom line in business talk. Voice America Business.
If you're a struggling business trying to get to the next plateau and would like to learn more about what Aldana can do for you,
log on to thegrowthstrategist.com. Listen to some of our many satisfied clients.
We called in the Growth Strategist to do a strategic analysis of our company, design an organizational structure, and improve our management team. The important point is that Aldana Ambler gets it. Her extensive experience coaching fast growth companies has really paid off for us.
Aldana played a key role in driving the rapid growth of our company. We now have a strategic growth plan in place, obtained growth financing, have a stronger management team, and expanded our services, and are already seeing profits. Companies dealing with business growth issues couldn't ask for a better or wiser business advisor than Aldana Ambler.
What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-ALDANA today and see where your business can go tomorrow. Once again, that number is 1-888-ALDONNA. TheGrowthStrategist.com. Achieving accelerated growth with sustained profitability.
The challenge of change comes as ramped up due to the advent of information age and the interconnectedness of global community. In a high-tech world, the ability to embrace change, adapt, and respond accordingly is key to personal and professional success. Talking Change with Ann Powers, airing every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific, explores the hows, whys, and what to do's when faced with change. Embrace the new reality. Adopt transition into your personal power portfolio and tune into Talking Change with Ann Powers every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time. Right here on the Bottom Line Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Are you looking for a unique perspective on today's market from an experienced economist? Well, look no further. Listen to The Economic Contrarian with host Mike Norman every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time on Business America Radio. Mike and his guests will discuss new trends in the marketplace, as well as emerging companies and opportunities. So if you want in-depth analysis from a contrarian point of view, don't miss The Economic Contrarian Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific Time right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business. This is Voice America Business.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll free at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Aldana Ambler.
Welcome back to the show. This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler, and today we're talking about surfing. Actually, it's nice enough weather outside. I'd like to be on the ocean and on a surfboard, but you wouldn't want to see it if I tried to do that. My surfing days are past, except for business. And what we're talking about here is, how do you recognize the new wave, some new opportunity, something that's going to drive the growth of the business? How do you recognize it in a timely way, get your analysis done, and say, go, and ride the wave for a while? And how do you know when the wave is kind of, you know, getting to a point where you've got to revisit and you've got to go on the next wave so that you keep growing? And if you miss a wave or you're not even looking, you know, you just play something out and then you've got lulls and it's just not good. And the analogy, the visual is very important. So I have some guests on the line here. Greg and Rick. Greg Diamond, you there?
Yes.
Hi. And these guys are, and Rick Levine, you there?
I am.
Hello. Now, these guys are co-CEOs, so you already know they're unconventional. Not everybody can do that. Of a company called Clovis, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Is it Clovis Group?
Our legal name is Clovis Group, but we are in the market and branded as Clovis.
Okay. So just the one word, Clovis, is kind of like Cher or Madonna, huh?
Correct.
All right, now we got to do a little bit of the pedigree and how you guys got where you are, so our audience can hear, you know, how you think and where you came from. You both worked together, if I understand it right, with a company called Million Eyes, and you know, you took that company kind of from inception to acquisition in a 16-month period. I mean, so you guys are used to working together, and you do things fast. So,
yeah.
Greg, tell me what Million Eyes was.
Yeah, you know, before I jump exactly into Million Eyes, you know, the history goes back further. Rick and I actually went to high school together, so talk about, you know, a...
Oh, that doesn't say that and all the stuff, and when I interviewed you, I didn't get that you went to high school together.
Yeah, so...
That's too cool.
Obviously, a lot of built-in consistencies and challenges when you're in a relationship for 20 years. So
yeah, consistency, challenges, and potential blind spots, you know. We'll definitely talk about that. I was working backwards. Right before Clovis, though, you guys were working together in key roles in Million Eyes. What was that?
Correct. Million Eyes was a VC-backed At the time, you would call it a dot-com.
Okay.
We were a company that was built from inception to be a free ISP. So the likes of most people probably recognize a Net Zero, where we were an ad-supported company.
Okay. And that was like a 16-month journey that you went on together. Now, before that, you weren't working together, because if I noticed this, Rick was with Cisco, and you were with ProLink Services?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Let's focus on you first. What was ProLink Services, and what'd you do?
ProLink Services was a company I joined as a partner in the firm to help them move their business model from, at the time, what was more of a staffing, commoditized business into a consulting-based business.
Yeah, you're brought in or you go someplace when they're looking for a significant change and a lift in what they're doing, if I'm reading this right. Because before that, you were with GE Capital Information, et cetera?
Yes.
See,
yes.
And they don't deploy dummy dumbs.
No, I mean, my days at GE Capital were kind of the foundation, I think, for me recognizing that I think I had some talents that were suited for, let's call it, dynamic change.
Yes.
Kind of pushing the envelope on a regular basis.
And before that, you were an account manager at Xerox.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So, I mean, you know, somebody hears this, you can hear, all right, somebody who likes to make things happen quickly, you're a change agent, you're a professional change agent.
Yeah, I think some may call that ADD.
Well, you know, a lot of my clients, you know, I specialize in the Inc. 500 types, and, you know, a lot of them look like they need Ritalin. But if you can figure out a good way to manage that, to harness it, that kind of energy is what's needed to drive it really quickly and to go surfing, isn't it?
Absolutely.
All right, so, you know, you see yourself as an administrative type, a sales type, a marketing type, what?
I'm a salesperson at heart who has, in the last 7 to 8 years, really adopted the systematized operational efficiency model.
Oh, you had to face the operations piece of the business, huh?
Yep, absolutely.
That's that alignment stuff.
Yeah, you know, it's one of the things that Rick and I realized early on where our strengths were and putting both of us in a position to be successful.
Now, Rick, we're going to reverse this for you.
Sure.
You're also a salesperson, though, too. If I read this right, and I remember from our interview ahead of time, you know, you when you were first working, you know, weren't you over a group of account managers and, you know, you kind of hard drove them to $25 million in sales? Do I remember that right?
That's correct. I started my career at Xerox, and that was definitely the foundation for a lot of my sales success. I had various different roles there. When I left Xerox, I was managing a team of account managers and a district in the D.C. area, and a lot of my core principles, you know, moving forward even today in the business, were driven by the successes that I had at Xerox. And
at the time frame that you're talking about, you know, the Xerox sales folks were pretty premier. It was a good time to be there, right?
Absolutely, yeah. It was.
And then you went to Cisco.
I did. I was brought into Cisco to take over about a half dozen major accounts, if you will. They didn't really have a large major account presence in the area where I was working, and I came in and managed about six accounts, and those were accounts that brought in significant revenues to Cisco internationally as well as locally.
So now you were at Cisco, and Greg, you were with, am I getting the dates right, where you were with ProLink. What made the two of you go to Million Eyes together?
I ended up coming up with the idea for Million Eyes, and I started the firm from the business plan forward. Once I received the funding and we were able to do some of the things we want to do from a growth perspective, I convinced Rick to leave Cisco.
Okay. I didn't know if you'd, you know, kind of co-founded that or if one of you started it and pulled the other guy in.
No, Rick was a smarter guy. He didn't come over until there was...
So he dragged you from Cisco, Rick, right? Okay,
yeah.
So you ran that, you rode that 16-month wave, and you fell. And
correct.
Did the two of you just kind of have this, now what, or did you know what you were going to do?
I would say, this is Rick, I would say there was a bit of both. I would say there was a now what, and but I think we both were convinced that we liked the entrepreneurial world, and we certainly entertained discussions to go back to, if you will, corporate America,
mm-hmm.
but I think we felt like, you know, the 16 months wasn't long enough to be in kind of an entrepreneur setting, and we knew we wanted to go do something.
Yeah, hell, that's only one or two waves.
Yeah.
You weren't done surfing.
No, we weren't. So
now, all right, so you liked working together. You've known each other for a long time. You've had this successful surf ride. You know, Rick, keep going and tell me, How did you come up with Clovis? What is the concept of the business? Why did you create it?
Sure. So when we had the Million Eyes, one of the challenges that I think we faced and a lot of other, if you will, dot-com companies back then faced was finding people. I mean, it was, frankly, we were targeted to grow, and we continued to grow, and we needed to find people in all different areas.
Yeah, IT if you people, rank order the challenges of a rapidly growing company, recruitment's right up there.
Yeah,
always.
And it certainly was.
Always.
And so we saw that as a huge challenge, and when we kind of stepped away from the business and kind of sat back and figured out what we wanted to do, we looked back at our experience and said that was probably one of the biggest challenges that we had was not only finding people, but working with organizations that kind of that got it. And we partnered with really every single company around town that provided recruitment services in various different capacities. But we felt like that there was nobody really out there that fully met our needs at the time. So,
so you didn't like the traditional headhunters and search firms and such?
Correct.
What didn't you like?
Yeah, I think the biggest, you know, I'll speak on, I was running kind of sales and business development at Million Eyes. Greg was doing some other things in operational settings. So I think the biggest challenge that I had coming out of a role with Xerox and Cisco and working with recruitment agencies to find sales and business development people is that they clearly didn't kind of, if you get it, where we could translate kind of our needs and what we wanted, and then come back and deliver candidates that kind of met some of those needs.
You didn't like their cookie-cutter approach?
Correct.
Okay. So, yes, all right, so the transition here in your mind was, this is our primary problem. There's got to be a better way? Is that
correct.
What happened to you?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, but you didn't have staffing background and you didn't have headhunting background. You created a company without background in it?
Yeah, neither of us had that background other than we probably hired hundreds of people throughout our career.
Yeah, you had the customer background.
Yeah, so we knew what it was like to go out and find the people and hire them and the questions you needed to ask, and we just didn't have the traditional recruiting staffing kind of come from that world. And,
all right, so one of the things that happens in your quarterly sessions when you go over strategy is you're fearless and you're looking at, you know, market trends and say, well, we can do better than that.
Absolutely.
That would happen to the two of you. You just kind of said, well, we can do this.
Yeah, I mean, and we really wanted to go into, part of us wanted to go into a business and not learn a lot about the business and really kind of focus on the issues that we were facing being at Million Eyes. We saw a big need in the industry for a company to come in here and service this need. And so we kind of just jumped in with both feet.
You guys are fearless. You really are. Okay, but Greg, I got you. It's your turn. All right, you sit down for your first, say, quarterly session, the two of you, and you say, we're going to create this business that is going to transform the search industry. We're actually going to do it a different way. Okay, that's kind of your goal. Am I saying it right?
Yes.
All right. Run through some of the major strategic decisions that you made at the time when you formed it together.
Yeah.
What were some of the premises?
The concept of doing it better or different wasn't because we just wanted to be different. It's because we really felt like there was a need. And in the business we entered, it was commoditized, and there wasn't a whole lot of, let's call it, value-add services being provided.
Okay. All right, so premise number one, we need to be value-added. What else?
Premise number two was we need to be consultative because there's a lot of people in this market that don't really understand what the customer needs. And in order for us to be successful, we have to be a customer-driven company.
So, you know, on a financial side of things, did you think you were going to be organically driven? Were you going to be outside funded? Were you going to lead with cash, debt? Did you ask any of those kind of questions when you started?
Yeah, and that was an easy answer for us. We
which
were
is what?
Organically driven. After you know, the experience through the VC community, which was a positive one, however, we were being driven to grow much faster than I think we were probably prepared for. Due to the investing.
It is a different dynamic, right?
Yep.
You know, you have the board of directors saying, okay, you know, here's the number that we have to, you know, hit to make the multiple. And so you would decide one of your premises was not to do that right away.
Yeah, early on we talked a lot about we were going to grow responsibly.
Okay.
And responsibly for us meant we had the funds available and the market was ready.
So some of the alignment was, you know, we're going to grow as fast as the value added would be delivered. As long as we're value added, then that's a good pace. If we stop, we start compromising the value added, then we're doing it too fast.
Yeah, yeah. You know, a good example would be for us. We didn't do IT services when we first started because, quite frankly, when we started in 2000, the IT market was in a major decline.
Oh, so you're not kidding.
And instead of banging our head against the wall, we said we're going to focus recruitment services in other areas.
Like what?
Well, we started out doing sales and management recruitment, mm-hmm. and then we moved into accounting and finance.
Okay.
We didn't move into IT, which today is our largest practice area, until 3 years ago when the market yielded enough opportunity for us to build the practice out.
So that's a good example of when you sit down with your quarterly sessions and review the key questions of, you know, what's our product mix and why. That evolution of which targets have been is a mirror of that.
Absolutely.
Okay, so Rick, your turn. All right, how about the marketing and the sales premises? When you guys first started Clovis, did you guys say that you were going to be leading with things like advertising and networking and speeches, or what? What was your mix?
Initially, I think our focus around marketing was more on the customer side, I mean, a little bit less on the traditional marketing, advertisements. Even today, we do minimal advertisements. It was more based on us getting in there, developing the relationships. Being that we already had a lot of existing relationships in the marketplace, it was going out and kind of stirring up those relationships and just kind of working off of those.
Yeah, I mean, you're really primarily salespeople, not marketing types.
Yeah, and the business that we're in, you know, people are coming to us for our services, and they're really buying our services because of our people, not because of an ad mm-hmm. that's, you know, in a newspaper or something mm-hmm. like that. So it was, now today, you know, obviously we've expanded and we're yeah. doing some other things in those areas. But
and operationally, what were some of the premises in the beginning? Did you have a structure in mind? Did you have processes in place? Did you have a decision-making model?
Right. So, you know, obviously, given both of our backgrounds in corporate America, we were very much driven by operational excellence and being as efficient as we can, even when there was just a handful of us in the company. So we put together a set of metrics that each of us had to adhere to, our employees had to adhere to, and we would do weekly, and we still do today weekly, what we call dashboard meetings to make sure that people are holding to these metrics, to make sure that the metrics are in line with our customer demand, making sure that everybody throughout the organization is accountable. Even Greg and I actually do dashboards with each other on a weekly basis to make sure that we're both holding each other accountable to certain things in the, within
you know, another book I've referred people to who are listening to the show is for them to read The Discipline of Market Leaders in our rehearsal. You know, you mentioned that same book. And you guys are the type of people that kind of see work as something you do rather than a place you go. So that's one of your strategies, isn't it, is this operational excellence is almost obsession with we're going to be really good at this whatever we do.
Yeah, this is Greg, and I would say that, you know, The Discipline of Market Leaders gave us the general premise of make sure you're really good at something. You combine mm-hmm. that with GE's general premise, which is if you can't be number one or two, you shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah, if they can't be number one, they don't even bother. They'll sell off the division. It's interesting.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That rolls into our organization today as, you know, I call it personal accountability.
Yeah.
Everyone in the organization has a clear vision of what their job is. They have the tools to get it done. And they know that every week it's going to be expected that it's done.
All right, now I'm being told I need to take a break. So we're going to come back and we're going to say the way you've evolved this, how many years have you been in this business?
Seven.
6 years?
We're going on our seventh year.
Okay. So, you know, how has it evolved over that period of time? This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. We'll be right back.
Fresh, dynamic, and totally prepared for continuing business education. Business Talk Radio. Voice America Business at voiceamerica.com.
If you're a struggling business trying to get to the next plateau and would like to learn more about what Aldana can do for you, log on to thegrowthstrategist.com. Listen to some of our many satisfied clients.
We called in the Growth Strategist to do a strategic analysis of our company, design an organizational structure, and improve our management team. The important point is that Aldana Ambler gets it. Her extensive experience coaching fast growth companies has really paid off for us.
Aldana played a key role in driving the rapid growth of our company. We now have a strategic growth plan in place, obtained growth financing, have a stronger management team, and expanded our services and are already seeing profits. Companies dealing with business growth issues couldn't ask for a better or wiser business advisor than Aldana Ambler.
What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-ALDONA today and see where your business can go tomorrow. Once again, that number is 1-888-ALDONNA. TheGrowthStrategist.com. Achieving accelerated growth with sustained profitability.
Growing a business successfully not only requires increased sales, but profitable sales. Over 80% of small businesses will fail to do this in the first 5 years. On Acorns to Oaks, Growing Your Small Business with Tom Long, he will share his years of business experience to maximize profitability and ensure longevity and sustainability. Broadcasting every Friday at 1 p.m. Pacific, Acorns to Oaks, Growing Your Small Business provides insight into key areas of business, coordination of management, finance, operations, time management, people, and marketing, as well as sales. Tune in and learn how to grow your business into that mighty oak every Friday at 1 p.m. Pacific on Voice America Business.
Listen wherever you are. 24-hour business and financial news. Solid, focused, and informed. The leader in business talk. Voice America Business at voiceamerica.com.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll-free at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Aldana Ambler.
Welcome back to the show. This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler, and today we're talking about riding waves. And I've got great guests on here today, Greg Diamond and Rick Levine of Clovis. They're co-CEOs, so you know these guys, you know, like to live on the edge and try something that other people don't do. And it's a search firm, and they, you know, they specialize in things like the finance folks, the sales manager types, and the IT types, correct, guys? And so people who are looking for A players, you know, Clovis would be an organization that you'd want to go to. And the way that they're differentiating themselves is to really have that relationship that they work on with their clients so that they've listened. They're not just doing a cookie-cutter approach, so that they have a higher retention than a lot of search firms, and you just don't feel like it's the same thing that you've been getting from everybody else. I've already referred a client to them, and we'll see if they get taken care of. Now, all right, so they're living on the edge. They're creating this, you know, trying to revolutionize an industry. Their operational excellence and their focus, you can hear how they sound. Now, what I want to know is, in the six-year journey, how many waves have you identified, and how did you make the transition? So the first wave, we've talked a little bit. How long did that wave of startup last? When did you find yourself saying, okay, now we better sit down, we better look at this and modify?
This is Rick. I'll jump in here.
Okay.
Interesting question, because I think coming out of this startup mode and building a company and starting a company from scratch, we were looking at kind of casting a wide net, and there was a lot of things that we were considering doing. And, you know, as everybody can probably
classic
relate
startup,
to.
Classic startup, even you guys.
Yeah. I mean, for example, it's a pretty funny story. I mean, we had a phone where we were taking spring break trips, you know, in our first couple months in business, because we heard that was a hot thing to do. And I think our big wave came about 6 months later, and we sat down and said, you know what, we can't be everything to everybody. Mm-hmm. We got to just focus on the things that we do well. And that's going to mean that we're going to have to potentially turn down some employees. We're going to have to certainly turn down some clients and maybe even turn down some revenue streams.
Well, you know, that test of whether or not you met that premise of operational excellence. If you can't do it great, why are you doing it? And if you felt some compromise in there, you didn't ignore it. You dealt with it.
Yeah. And
so you let some stuff go, huh?
Yeah. And, I think it was working with Greg and I on that, I mean, obviously that was a constant kind of challenge, one of us perceiving that there was big opportunity, the other one kind of pulling the other person back in. So,
yeah.
You know, it's probably good to have a couple people, mm-hmm. you know, for that reason, that you're constantly, you have that yin-yang kind of thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
So that was our initial wave, and that lasted a couple months until we really retooled and figured out who we wanted to be when we grew up. And
well, that was pretty fast.
Yeah.
A lot of people have to have, like, lost a big account or, you know, not been profitable or something significant, some really significant pain to even ask the question. So your focus on having rapidly growing companies in your background probably helped you deal with it quicker.
Absolutely.
All right. Wave two was what? What's characterizing wave two?
Wave two was really what the effects of wave one, which was once we did get focused, we quickly understood that we were about to outgrow
our capabilities both on the infrastructure side as well as on the sales side. So we decided it was time to put the effort forth to build the infrastructure.
Okay.
And the infrastructure for us was a combination of, you know, general management philosophies, policies, procedures, core values, training programs, things of that nature, where we were going to build something that when we did start to make the hires, you know, we're in a people business. So when we did bring new people in, that they understood what was asked, what they were supposed to do, and they had all the tools and the resources and the general practices to get their job done.
So I call that the commitment phase. Some businesses, you know, where they, you know, they had to find out, could they sell, could they attract the accounts that they thought they were going to attract, and when they find the answer is yes, they go, you know what, we better be serious behind the scenes here to make absolutely certain nothing's going to go wrong.
Absolutely.
And so you have that kind of phase.
Yeah, because we're so customer-focused, and I don't say that just as a cliché-ish term.
No, you guys are.
We really respect the customer and understand that they're the ones that are paying our bills, and we said we can't put ourselves in a position to sell something that we can't deliver on.
Yep. You have guarantees?
Yes.
Well, see, a lot of search firms don't. It's a real issue with, you know, you spend a lot of money up front, and you could end up with a knucklehead, and then what do? And you argue with the search firm. It's annoying to a lot of clients.
Yeah, and we're from a customer satisfaction perspective, we're in the 98th percentile as far as.
When you were hiring, was it tricky to figure out, should they be people that had search background, or did you want somebody who hasn't learned the old-fashioned way and had to unlearn, relearn? How'd you handle that? Rick, how'd you handle that?
This is Rick. I would say that's probably continues to be one of the challenges that we face each and every time we go to hire somebody, because this business is a consultative business that you've really got to go in and understand the customer and build a relationship. But yet, it can be very tactical, and it can be one that requires a lot of kind of putting your head down. It's a really difficult kind of skill set to identify somebody that can kind of play on both sides of the fence there. So, we're using tools. We use top grading. That approach.
I am a fan. Have you seen the DVD that they've got out now to help people really know how to do the top grading interview?
Yeah, I mean, we get some strange looks when we start asking people about their high school days and their high points and low points. But
if you can hear the transitions, you know, if they change from one job to the next, why? And do they badmouth the previous boss, or do they get, you know, that there is something going on? You know, if they were denying it when they were 15, and then you hear denial again when they were in college, and denial again when they were 30, guess what? We got a pattern here.
Yeah.
You don't want to hire somebody that's still blaming somebody from eighth grade.
It's amazing how much you can learn about the true characters of someone in a short period of time when you ask the right
question. Yeah, I think candidates who wanted to get a job should look at the DVD for the top grading, because then they can see, you know, learn what bosses are truly trying to pull out of people, you know? So anyway, so that was one of your key questions. In phase two, where you're looking at operational excellence, how long did that last? How long was that wave?
The wave on the creation side was probably about a year, because to create these types of core values and philosophies, it's not just, in our opinion, what Rick and I believe in.
Right.
We had to take the entire company, and we took a very democratic approach to it, because we figured if we create something that we believe in that the rest of the people with us don't, then to pull them along and get them aligned is not going to be the right way to do it. So we actually integrated almost the entire company into the process of developing true core values. You know, what do we all really believe in? What do we want to be when we grow up? And what practices and policies are we going to be willing to adhere to in order to support that type of delivery?
Now, one of the challenges of a company led by a couple of sales guys, I mean, if it's your heart of hearts, you're both sales. You are. And when you look at the patterns of people that have been in that model, you know, for blind spots and such, one of the things that happens with alignment often is that they tend to favor flexibility over stability. You know, being responsive to the marketplace, let's do this to take care of customers, and here's a wave that we're going to be going into. And there's more change in their organizational structure, more change in expectations, more change in the products. You know, it's almost like the job shop mentality versus a manufacturer.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need to have people behind you that would understand both the need for flexibility to respond to customers, but consistency in what they're doing so that it's high quality.
Yeah, you know,
right?
Part of our interview process is making sure that all the new people coming in truly believe in what we've already built, because it's not going to change. You know, we're fans of Good to Great. It was our theme in 2006. One of the main premises there is, you know, you should recognize what should never change and what should always change. And the core essence of how we operate and who we are and our values should never change. So we ensure that.
But isn't that one of the tricky things? Which part changes and what, you know, because you got a new wave coming in or a new need or a new product or a new kind of customer, and what part needs to be stable? For a lot of sales-led organizations, that's the most impossible piece.
Absolutely. Salespeople traditionally want to say yes to everything.
Yeah. So, you know, it's like, you know, I sold it, you know, the only questions are by when and how much.
Right, right.
All right, so wave three comes when?
Wave three comes in mid-2004,
okay.
Mid to late 2004. We landed a large client, a Fortune 10 company.
Yeah.
And I say this is not only was a wave, obviously, for Greg and I, but I think it was a huge wave for the company, for everybody to kind of look around and go, we can really do this. And not only did we land the client, we delivered on, you know, our promises, and we continue to service the client today. But it was, you know, kind of a huge step externally from a credibility perspective as well as internally. And
I know what you're talking about. Years ago when we landed the first big account, I mean really big, it was like five times larger than any of the ones before it. You know, one of the questions is, how big does your company need to be now that you swallowed this watermelon, that you took this on?
Right.
And for, you know, right? And so for that account to not feel like they own you, how do they be in proportion of everything else? So if it's, you know, $1 million account, you know, if in your industry nobody could have more than a quarter or a fifth of the business, you're saying you need to be a $5 million company pretty much overnight to manage that account well and have your business be in proportion. And was this account a really big percentage of your business at the time?
Yeah, I mean, it was. It continues to be, and or, you know, even into the end of last year, and actually leads us into our final wave. Well, I say final, but there's going to be many more along the way. But our most recent wave, I should say. So, you know, it was one of the scenarios where we landed the account, we started servicing it, and we, you know, looked back and started to realize it was representing a large portion of our revenue.
So, what did you decide? You were going to be, you know, five times larger than them, or what?
Well, what led us into, I guess, our fourth wave was the need to diversify. And it was kind of a multiple-tier wave where there was this kind of hanging out there. We had this large account. It was representing, you know, a good portion of our revenues. We obviously know we need to diversify out of that account, but what can we go out to the marketplace and try to replicate the success we have there? And then there was also some things going on with Greg and I where we felt like there was a lot of things that were redundant in what we were doing and how we were running the company.
I was going to ask, you know, it must be related to, you know, figuring out what CEO meant. Now, I've got to take a break. The guy's saying to me, come on, you're way over time. This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. We'll be right back.
More and more people are starting their day with informative, focused business talk. Top experts. Today's business issues. Voice America Business at voiceamerica.com.
If you're a struggling business trying to get to the next plateau and would like to learn more about what Aldana can do for you, log on to thegrowthstrategist.com. Listen to some of our many satisfied clients.
We called in the Growth Strategist to do a strategic analysis of our company, design an organizational structure, and improve our management team. The important point is that Aldana Ambler gets it. Her extensive experience coaching fast growth companies has really paid off for us.
Aldana played a key role in driving the rapid growth of our company. We now have a strategic growth plan in place, obtained growth financing, have a stronger management team, and expanded our services, and are already seeing profits. Companies dealing with business growth issues couldn't ask for a better or wiser business advisor than Aldana Ambler.
What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-ALDONA today and see where your business can go tomorrow. Once again, that number is 1-888-ALDONNA. TheGrowthStrategist.com. Achieving accelerated growth with sustained profitability.
Mr. Simplicity, Bill Jensen, is on a mission to make it easier for you to get stuff done. He wants you to do less stupid stuff so you can do more of what matters. He'll coach you as a speaker at your event or one-on-one. He'll help you by consulting side-by-side with your teams, and he'll teach you through his books and downloads from his website. Visit today at www.simplerwork.com. And he welcomes your emails at bill@simplerwork.com. Smarter, not harder, is your work and your life, condensed and clarified. Mr. Simplicity is on a mission to make it easier for you to get stuff done. He'll give you the tools you need to do less stupid stuff and do more of what really matters. Let's succeed together.
Tune into Small Business Trends Radio with Anita Campbell every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. Each week, Anita and expert guests provide a big picture view of the small business market, identifying the trends and major events driving the robust growth of the small business market. Whether you are a small business owner or a company of any size desiring to sell small businesses or reach the small business market with a product or service, Small Business Trends Radio is your resource for trends that influence the global small business market. Right here on the Bottom Line for Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Business information you need. From the stock market to starting and managing your business. Voice America Business at voiceamerica.com.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll free at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Aldana Ambler.
Welcome back to the show. This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler, and we're talking about riding waves. And I want to make sure that you have contact information for our guests from Clovis. Rick Levine, would you tell us some contact information where people can reach you and Greg Diamond?
Absolutely. Contact information is area code 301-365-8480, and email address is rick.levine, L-E-V-I-N-E, at clovisgroup.com.
That's C-L-O-V-I-S.
Correct. Group.
And the people who are trying to reach me, if you know my name, it's real easy. It's 1-888-ALDONA, A-L-D-O-N-N-A. And the website, the email is aldana@ambler.com. Now, I wanted to finish up the show with you guys describing, you had an inflection point in fall of 06. You know, you get this big account, it was a large percentage of your margin, of your volume, and you dealt with it, and you had to look at the co-CEO role again. So you kind of put your heads down for, 60 days to really regroup again. This is your style. If you don't just meet every quarter, you're looking at major inflections, major shifts in the business and say, okay, let's make sure we're aligned, right? Am I reading it right?
Absolutely.
So you're in your fourth wave now. What's characteristic of your fourth wave now for the next couple minutes?
We recognize not just because it was the end of the year and we were doing some planning, but that because we landed a large account, there was a huge opportunity to parlay that into new opportunities. But in order to do that, we needed to even further define and crystallize the roles that Rick and I would take in order to what I call divide and conquer.
Well, you could end up being, like parents where people play each other off. Or if you're only focused on sales, you could really miss the balance and the alignment. And I would wonder in your co-CEO roles if somebody has to be a little more focused on the operations and finance and somebody else needs to be a little more focused on the marketing and sales. Did you go that way?
That's basically exactly what we did.
Yeah.
We decided, Rick was stronger on the sales side and would be out externally facing and
mm-hmm.
driving new opportunities and new services, and I would take the inside on the operational efficiency side and make sure that we were delivering well and continuing to...
Now, you've got to smile because, it might not have been what you thought. It sounds like you've got your antennas with the marketplace, but I would suggest to you that maybe the traditional marketing, I'm not talking the advertising, but the things that would draw leads to you so it's not just having to do, the one-on-one relationship sales, could add a level of efficiency to where you're headed. So if you were to rank order the various things that you guys embrace versus kind of, maybe throw off and maybe not see that it could make you money, might make you money, I might suggest the marketing side would be what you'd look at. Just a thought. Because just in listening to you, you can hear you embrace the sales and the finance and you understand the operations. And I wonder if, accountable marketing could make you money.
It's funny you say, because I mentioned earlier, about marketing is not just putting an ad in a newspaper.
It's
I understand
not.
That. But we have been investing in some online advertising, and it's starting to
get really good advice, because there's, you know, you can spend a lot of money. Marketing can be this bottomless pit,
yep.
or it can be this truly accountable, you know, magnet that makes your, you know, sees your sales department as its customer. And yep. listening to you guys, I would ask you in your next quarter, make sure you truly ask the tough questions about marketing on pricing and positioning and the real marketplace and, you know, our leader, follower, challenger, niche, da-da-da-da, all that stuff. I want to see or hear what you guys sound like in 6 months when you've got another wave coming. All right. I hope the listeners can hear that in the journey that you have, it's not static. Life's not static. You're managing waves of growth and change. These guys are hard driving towards, what is it, 22 million this year? And you've got over 100 people already. And in a search firm, that is really rapid growth. Good for you. I appreciate you guys being on the show. You could probably do another hour for me.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time.
I appreciate you being guests. My wish for the listeners, as it is every week, is for accelerated growth with sustained profitability. This is the Growth Strategist, Aldana Ambler, signing out.
Voice America Business would like to thank you for logging on and tuning into The Growth Strategist. Join us each Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time for another exciting episode of The Growth Strategist, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.